Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And as we continue talking to the New York City mayoral hopefuls, John Liu is back with us. Controller Liu, welcome back to WNYC.
I thought it was just me, Brian. You had the others also?
Well, once in a while, you know. We have this little thing called...
Equal time?
Yeah, hanging over our heads. First, any thoughts about Boston or, for that matter, about how good a mayor you would make for being in charge of the city's counterterror operations?
Well, obviously, it's been a horrific experience we have seen unfold in Boston. And obviously, we here in New York feel very much sympathetic to what's happened there just because we've certainly been through more than our fair share of terrorist incidents. And I think it reminds us of the age that we're living in today, where a big event like the Boston Marathon that draws people from all over the world can be attacked in this way and having people killed and so many dozens of people injured.
Can you see yourself? Do you think the city can see you in charge of the counterterror operations that Commissioner Kelly and Mayor Bloomberg have taken so much pride in?
Absolutely. I certainly am ready. I understand the issues and what it takes to keep the city safe. But I think the issue is also that we have to keep a city, people safe in a city where we also don't throw our values out the window.
Does that mean you would scale back some of the proactive elements of the operations, considering the accusations by some that the NYPD does surveillance in mosques as a matter of profiling or any other practice?
Well, thanks for bringing that up, Brian. Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about when I say we don't throw our values out the window. It's very important to keep people safe, and we do have to have our own operations within the NYPD, given that I don't think we get enough support from Washington on this front, even though we are apparently, as Boston is, on the front lines of this war against terrorism. But I think there's also some unfair tagging of people. I don't believe in monitoring people simply because of the religious belief that they observe. And if you look at what happens when we blanket people, right? Or broad brush people, you see a couple of possible hate crimes right here in New York City, particularly one where a Bangladeshi man was beaten up in the Bronx with reported epithets against him, saying that this was in retaliation for what happened in Boston. And of course, now that there are suspects, one killed, one where there's a huge manhunt on for, it appears that, you know, they don't appear to be Muslim, that, you know, they're possibly from Russia.
Oh, the individuals, they're from a part of the Russian Federation near Chechnya that's had a strong jihadi insurgency. So they may be Muslim.
It's possible, but the point here is that broad brushing people, certainly based on their religious belief, I think is just not. I don't think it's what this country is about.
And do you think that Commissioner Kelly has actually done that? Because he would deny that.
I'm not sure that he has denied that. I think my recollection of his comments is that he has been within the law. And you know, again, I'm not going to claim to be a legal expert here, but the bottom line is that I believe that people have been monitored simply because of their religious belief.
All right. Changing topics, I see that your latest proposal is to revamp the city's budget process so that we don't go through this annual charade that everybody's familiar with that happens every
the
spring.
The budget cha-cha.
It's coming to a radio station near you very soon, since it's April, in which the mayor proposes cuts to libraries and fire stations and other things, and the city council and interest groups get all upset, and then most of it is restored before they pass a budget in June.
Right.
Can you really eliminate that political theater?
I think so. This political theater has been a rerun going on for several years now. It's almost identical from one year to the next. It's always the same services that are proposed to be reduced or eliminated, and then at the last minute, the mayor and the council speaker, they waltz in and announce that most of the cuts have been saved or staved off. This is something that is harmful. Number one, it wastes a vast amount of government and taxpayer resources to have people go through this budget dance, whether they be employees of the city or they're advocates from the outside or advocates from nonprofit organizations that are funded by the city. But moreover, I think that it just focuses the public on anywhere from $200 to $400 million in a budget of $70 billion. We're talking about a half of 1% of the city's budget where the attention is heaped on, and it's almost like a blinder to the rest of the budget. My office has combed through the budget top to bottom and proposed over the next 4 years $15 billion of needs that we should be addressing, needs like more resources for education, particularly for young kids through middle school, even helping high school students get through college and actually succeed in college, to helping the homeless, which, you know, obviously there's a huge huge problem going on in the city of New York, and also tax reform that makes for a more level playing field, finally instituting some progressive form of tax.
So are you saying that you as mayor would spend an additional $15 billion over the next 4 years than our current revenues would probably allow for, and that you're going to hike taxes to that extent?
The budget that I proposed in this budget, in what I call this budget for the people or the people's budget, identifies $15 billion of needs that I think New Yorkers want, along with $15 billion of revenues over the next 4 years that will be obviously needed to pay for those bills.
Where would those revenues come from?
A lot of them would be closing of loopholes in our tax code, where large corporations get exempt from some basic city taxes, whereas, you know, small businesses and residents always have to pay through the nose what they call our fair share. I think it's time that everybody pay their fair share.
What else besides corporate tax loopholes? That's not $15 billion by itself, right?
No, but it's a fair amount. It's also having the more progressive income tax code, where we can have 99% of the taxpayers in New York City get a reduction in their income tax, but those who make over $500,000 a year get more than pay a little bit more, about 1 to 1.25% more in city income tax. Additional revenues from the tolling of East River bridges for people who are not city residents. I think that's fair game, and you know, it actually helps our economic development by reducing some of the congestion that comes in from out of the city.
And in this people's budget, as you call it, you list what you call people and community priorities, which begin with universal preschool and pre-K for 3 and 4 year olds. So not only pre-K, but the year before that.
The experts say that learning really begins as early as 3. Many, you know, my son started preschool when he was 2.5, and other kids with means start very early. It's time to allow people in New York City of all different means and income levels to have that same access.
And after that, it's listed to hire an additional 5,000 police officers and create 100,000 units of affordable housing.
Yes.
So those are what you judge to be the people's top 3 priorities for additional spending.
I wouldn't say the top 3 priorities. There are 70 specific budget proposals in this people's budget, and I think that it reflects the needs and the wants of people in this city.
On affordable housing, and my guest is New York City Controller and Mayoral Hopeful John Liu. If you're just joining us, we will continue to cover throughout the show the developments in Boston. Nothing's actually happened to report on in the last hour or so. So we will keep talking about other things and not just do rolling coverage of no news. But we will get back to it absolutely whenever anything is going on. And we have a number of Boston-related guests scheduled. So stay with us if you don't want to obsess on nothing, but we can guarantee you the something whenever there is something to report. On affordable housing, I remember the 2001 campaign where there was kind of a bidding war between Mike Bloomberg and Mark Green. Bloomberg promised 60,000 new or preserved affordable housing units. Green promised a much higher number, and Bloomberg wound up at 165,000. So last week, when I moderated that Furman Center Candidates Forum on affordable housing, of course, you and the others were there. We played clips the next day. It struck me that you all did not really engage in that kind of bidding war on the stage. And your number in this people's budget is 100,000 units in 4 years. Is that actually quite modest considering the demand? And do you think that this is a different kind of year for all of you running where you're not going to get into bigger versus bigger numbers?
Well, I think we are much more hampered this year by budgetary constraints and the fiscal outlook than how Mike and Mark may have been 12 years ago. But I also think that, you know, the number that my office came up with, the 100,000 units over the next 4 years, that reflects our growing population. And it is an aggressive plan. It is not a safe plan. It's an aggressive plan that we have to work hard towards meeting. So I don't believe in, you know, lowballing numbers just so that we make sure we get there. This is a number that I think it needs to be upheld so that we can keep up with the pace of increasing demand for housing, given that our city's population continues to increase at a brisk pace.
And your press release says create, not the language we hear from Bloomberg, which is create or preserve X units of affordable housing. So what happens to all those units that landlords are taking out of the affordable system through the weaker rent stabilization laws?
Well, that doesn't mean that we still have to work towards keeping the units that are, for example, coming out of Mitchell-AMA program, keep them affordable somehow. And there are ways to do that. In fact, my office has been working with certain state agencies to figure out how we can leverage city resources.
So it's 100,000 new that you're promising, plus trying to preserve things that would be coming out of Mitchell-AMA or other programs?
I think there'll be a little bit of a blend of both. But nonetheless, we have an aggressive housing creation as well as rehabilitation program, affordable housing, I should say.
Now, we are doing this interview as your former campaign treasurer and one of your major fundraisers are on trial for conspiracy to illegally raise money for your campaign through a straw donor scheme. Is it your position that even if they are found guilty, the voters should not judge your candidacy in any way by that?
I think the voters will judge me and my candidacy on a whole host of issues, and the voters would have every right to consider what has happened in this trial. But, you know, the trial, I'm very happy that it's finally here. This has been a long, drawn-out process. This investigation has been going on for 4 years now. And, you know, the amount of the volumes of documents that they've reviewed, thousands of my supporters and contributors being interrogated, my own phone being wiretapped. And yet the only thing that they have come up with after 4 years are these charges against these two individuals. I have confidence in my former treasurer. I think she's a good person. I think based on what I see and read in the newspapers, Oliver may have made a mistake. That's for the jury to decide. And we'll go from there. But I have put forth a very aggressive vision about what I think the city of New York needs. This is a city that I think has gone down the wrong path in recent years. My family and I, we came to New York, to America, to pursue the American dream. And that's what the promise of New York has been. And yet that promise, I think, has been lost somewhat.
Your aide, Sharon Lee, was offered immunity in this case and turned it down. And as I've seen it reported, prosecutors say she will lie under oath if she testifies that no one asked her to make straw donor contributions to your campaign that she may admit she made. Are you worried about her testimony?
Brian, I don't claim to be a legal expert. I'm reading this in the newspapers. What I'm reading is that they offered her immunity. She declined the immunity. She's going to testify because they want her to testify, and they expect her to lie. I don't get that. I hope the jury can figure out what exactly is happening here, because it seems so convoluted, all this stuff. And again, this investigation into my fundraising, I'm very proud of much higher ethical constraints that I have placed on my own campaign. For example, I don't accept contributions from people who do business with the city. I'm the first comptroller in history who does not accept contributions from Wall Street. And yet somehow I'm the only one who has a fundraising investigation. So look, we haven't changed a thing. We've continued to raise funds to the point where I'm fully funded for the campaign. And I'm very proud of everything we've done.
How would you describe your current relationship with Ms. Lee? Does she remain a trusted aide?
Absolutely. I have every confidence in her.
And if she does take the stand and say she made straw donations, but nobody asked her to do so, how would that affect your trust?
I don't think there were ever any straw donations made. But again, the facts will come out in the trial. This is what I've always said, that let's the investigators, I don't second guess what they want to do or need to do. They should just do it expediently. And I'm glad that the trial is here and that the public as well as the jury is getting more and more of the facts out.
Do you know why your campaign manager, Chung Seto, was in the gallery during the proceedings earlier this week? You just said you get your information on this from the newspaper, but your campaign manager was in the gallery in the court.
I don't know if she's there all the time. Look, she's a member of the public. Anybody can sit in on the public. Presumably, I could too if I had the time.
And finally on this, have the prosecutors told you if you yourself are still being investigated?
They haven't said anything. I haven't heard anything for the longest time, which is why, again, it's time. I've been very clear about my position on this. This is an investigation into something that I've actually been very proud of, my fundraising practices. We have no incentive to take shortcuts or anything like that. But, if you think about what's happened here, the crux of the case against two people associated with my campaign fundraising is this undercover investigation. I'm sorry, this undercover agent that somehow deceived his way into my campaign. I don't think, Brian, I don't know if any campaign out there can defend themselves against an undercover agent that is going to try to trick or deceive his way into this. And that's exactly what I believe happened here.
One more policy thing before we run out of time. I want to get your comment as controller and as a candidate on Deputy Mayor Cass Holloway's speech yesterday, if you've seen it, in which he seemed to propose a contract settlement with a variety of municipal unions whose contracts expired. And this would include health benefits reform. Have you seen it, or do you have a way you would go on this?
I have seen and I have heard parts of it. I haven't read the whole thing. But it seems like, how many years have transpired since the bulk of these contracts were expired? We're now talking about a situation where over 300,000 city employees are working without current contracts. And now the administration is basically giving this choice that based on the reaction of the union leaders, they're already calling it a joke, that it's not a serious attempt at negotiating these contracts. This is an abdication of responsibility on the part of Mayor Bloomberg. That the fact that he was given he asked for a third term because, the city was in an economic crisis and we needed some kind of financial genius to manage us through the process. And this is the failure that we have seen. Your question about how I would approach it, there are lots of bills to be paid, no question about it. The city, we're going to start January 2014 with the city significantly deep in the red, if not based on current accounts, based on past practice that the city will have to foot the bill for. Past practice, as we have seen under the Bloomberg administration, where the collective bargaining process has generally included retroactive pay increases. So for the mayor to now say, we're not going to have any retroactive pay increases, that's the problem. That's why he's not able to negotiate seriously with anybody else, because he's breaking from a practice that he himself has engendered throughout the rest of his administration.
But in your opinion, should all city workers in the next contracts be required to contribute something to their health insurance premiums?
We need to address the fact that health care costs are going up for workers in the private sector, going up for people in the public sector, our city employees. That's something that needs to be negotiated with the union leaders. Nobody can simply say or make blanket statements that, it should be this way or it can't be that way. And that's precisely the problem that Bloomberg has, that he's made these blanket statements without seriously consulting or much less negotiate with these union.
And how
leaders.
Do you square, last thing, that you, and you're not the only one, many of the candidates mm-hmm. in the Democratic primary are seeking public sector union endorsements? Can you negotiate on behalf of the taxpayers if you're also looking for the endorsements of those people you'd be negotiating against?
Absolutely. And, I'm surprised this question keeps coming up. I think that the public has every right to ask the question. But Brian, you've been around for a long time, right? You pretty much have seen anything and everything that's happened in the city. The fact that the candidates who are running for mayor, myself included, are asking for unions and their leaders for support is nothing new. And it's not something that Mayor Bloomberg didn't do. In fact, many would argue that right before re-election in 2005 and as he was pursuing that third term in 2009, he was rather generous. So, let's call all of this for what it is.
John Liu, New York City Comptroller and mayoral hopeful. Thank you very much. We'll keep talking.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up, the latest from Boston and much more on other things, too. Stay with us.